And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. Man, it's just a day of News Channel 5. You got to love it. John Burton in the morning show.
I joked as he was walking out, Darren. I said, we're just like Peter Laviolette and the Preds. We just keep coming over the boards. We're coming in waves all day long.
Speaking of that nice segue, tonight's the Predators in Brooklyn against the New York Islanders. 6 o'clock puck drop. Pregame at 5. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. They're on the road all week. Tonight against the Islanders after they beat up on the Rangers Saturday night here. Toronto on Wednesday. Ottawa on Thursday. And Montreal on Saturday.
So you're saying they can be New York City champions tonight?
Oh.
With a win?
Let me tell you, the Rangers fans, they were in the house.
They were.
On Saturday night.
There's a lot of blue in there.
They were loud and proud.
Somebody brought that up to me. A friend of mine who's a season ticket holder said, I said that as I was walking out. I was like, wow, I think there's going to be a lot of blue here tonight. I'm seeing a lot of Rangers sweaters. And he said, that game wasn't on one of the sort of protected list or the premium games that they make it difficult to. So apparently, Saturday night for New York people, they thought this is a good time to go to Nashville, and with tickets apparently readily available, they took advantage.
Well, I knew that something was up on the walk to the arena when I heard a chant in the far distance of "Let's go Rangers," and I'm like, are they saying "Let's go Rangers"? You know, like I said, it was faint, but it was pretty loud because the closer I got, and so the ones that I met, I will say this. Now, I've heard conflicting stuff because I've also talked to people that evidently they got out of hand and they were a little obnoxious and there were some troubled spots. The ones that I dealt with in Barrel House and the ones that I was around all night, they were just happy to be in Nashville, happy to be at the game, recognize that their team isn't very good right now, and they were just having a good time. Now, they were loud. Don't get me wrong. They were loud, and they were kind of like the Bears when they came in to play the Titans. My guess is alcohol sales were way up Saturday night. I don't think I heard any stories of them running out of alcohol in the arena.
We still had Miller Lite in the city by 10 o'clock Saturday night, which is an upgrade from when Chicago invades.
Yeah, I did not hear anything about where any place, any establishment ran out of alcohol, but I do know that they were having a good time.
Yeah.
But the ones that I met, in fact, most all the ones that I met, it was their first time to Nashville. Their first game here, and they had nothing but nice things to say. But like I said, during the game, they were loud.
They were, although I'll say this, is if you're going to have a large contingent of your opponent's fans in the building, the Preds had the perfect recipe for how to basically shut them up. It's low scoring in the first period. You stymie anything that they have going. You score early in the second. You lead pretty much throughout the entire game. The two times when I was like, oh, yeah, there are a lot of people here are both Rangers goals.
Yeah.
And you know what happened? And this, to me, regardless of who was in the crowd, the most impressive part of Saturday night to me was both times when the Rangers scored, they had tilted the ice and was like, uh-oh, there's some momentum here for New York. And then
all of a sudden,
instant responses. 2 minutes and 15 seconds the first time around, 16 seconds the second time around. I mean, what does that say about this team that not just are they good and they tend to control play, but somebody gives you kind of that sudden change like that, and all of a sudden you can respond that quickly? I think that says a lot about just how good this team is.
I actually brought that up, Steve, to Roman Josi, who was the postgame guest in Barrel House Saturday night, and I said the one thing that's jumped out at me really these last two home games, the Keens on Thursday night, or is it Keens? That's for you, Hal. Or the Rangers – Saturday night is the quick responses by the Predators. What you just said, the two power play goals for the Rangers, Predators came right back and just shut everything down immediately. Think about this. They thought they had scored first in the Los Angeles game. They would eventually score first, and it count.
And over and over and over.
Right, but it was, they would tack on, three in the first. But the apparent first goal of the game was wiped off, and you're thinking, okay, that would be a time for them to get frustrated. Instead, they just right after that, Johansson wins the draw, and they score, and away they go. Just to me, just the responses. This team is resilient. I mean, look, I don't know about you, being in the room for me right now, it has a different feel than last year.
Oh, yeah.
This year, one, they hadn't gone through it last year. They weren't sure, you know. Once you've gone through it and you know what you're capable of and you know this roster is better, there's just a feeling in there. Like right now, it's they're focused. They know there's still a lot more hockey to go before the playoffs, but still it's like you even heard players like Johansson say, let's get to the playoffs. We're ready to do this. I mean, this team is chomping at the bit to get into playoff hockey.
It's about fine-tuning right now and getting your game right to get into that stretch run and that playoff run ultimately. But I just think back a year ago. This time a year ago, this was a team that was on the outside looking in
They're
at the
playoff
picture.
Trying to find themselves.
So talk about a difference in a year. Of a year ago, you're just trying to get there. Now you know not only can you get there, but you're a team that could potentially win the whole thing when you do. That's a huge difference. But also, just looking at the lines, I went over this on Saturday night with a couple people. First off, your first line's back healthy. You didn't have that at the end of the playoffs last year. You now have essentially a second first line with the addition of Kyle Turris. Kevin Fiala's back healthy. Craig Smith looks like a different player this year. Your third line at the moment is Scott Hartnell and Nick Bonino, two guys who weren't here last year. In fact, Bonino was on the other side of you in the Stanley Cup final. And then you have a bunch of guys who are playing anywhere from like the second to the fourth line, basically filling out your forward groups. And now you're going to throw Mike Fisher back into the mix. I mean, you're going to have guys who are starting at first and, third line center for you in the Stanley Cup final who aren't even going to be playing center for you now. And you've got other guys, Freddie Gaudreau, who led the team in goals, that amazing story in the Stanley Cup final. He can't find a spot on the roster right now. Same thing with Pontus Aberg. So clearly, as you just look at this team, the way it's currently constituted right now, and we know injuries and all that, can have an effect. It certainly did last year. But as you just look at him right now, this is a way better roster than the team that came that close to winning it all a year ago.
Look at the play of Colton Sissons on the fourth line right now. Since the announcement of Fisher, he's gone back-to-back games with a goal, which Thursday night, that was his first goal in 29 games. And Colton Sissons had a hat trick to eliminate the Ducks. So you know he could score, but he's asked to do so many other things, take draws, special teams play. I mean, he can do it all. That's what is amazing about this roster, and which is Peter Laviolette must be just drooling. Yep. Just the versatility that they have, where they've got an embarrassment of riches at center position, or guys that can play center, which for years and years this franchise
big
is,
problem.
Why are they going to get a centerman? Why are they going to get a true centerman? And it was legit to bring that up, but it was what people were obsessed with, the lack of, I guess, center play, and now it's just littered on this roster where, like you said, there's guys that can't even make the roster. They can't even play because they're so talented right now when everybody's healthy or when nobody's suspended. That's the latest news.
That's unbelievable to me.
I know there's a lot of people hacked for good reason. Philip Forsberg suspended 3 games by the NHL for his hit on Jimmy Vesey.
Keep your head
Saturday
on a
night.
Swivel, Jimmy.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of, Steve, is just it was a play to the – you know, he didn't hit him, but his elbow went up and hit him in his face, and that's the only I could think of. I don't know how you get 3 games. Am I surprised by this?
I don't know how he got 1 game.
I wouldn't have been surprised with 1 game. I wouldn't have been surprised. 3, I went, wow.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been outraged with 1 game. I'm outraged over 3.
You would have been outraged with 1.
I would have been disappointed with 1, but 3 games is just absurd to me. I mean, this has got to be the first 3-game butt check suspension in the history of the National Hockey League, right? I mean, he didn't go in. This wasn't shoulder or, you know, leading with anything dangerous. He just gave him the old Forsberg reverse check, and yeah, the way he caught him delivered some damage. But I think just as much of the responsibility of that belongs on VC for not knowing where he was on the ice, not sort of paying attention to what was in front of him. I think you have to be responsible for your own self out there on the ice at times. And if Alexander Carrier, I mean,
right, they hit on Johansson.
That hit was vicious. That was shoulder to the head. If that's your... I don't know. I mean, I just can't see how that doesn't get what this does, because this to me was nothing.
Wow. We have a visitor, but we can't. Hi. Hi, visitor. Do you have a name tag?
I lost it.
I wish we could talk to you, but we'll talk to you later. Bye, visitor.
See ya.
You never know who will pop in here, right?
You never know who will pop into the studio right when you're on the air. There goes the visitor in the building. Hi, visitor. Good to see you. So you are outraged. Look, you're right, because there are other examples, and that's where you can see when the news came out, Predators fans were highly upset, and I get it. And I did have these conversations with Rangers fans. There were two huge hits Saturday night that they were ticked about, the Immelman hit and the Forsberg hit.
I think that's a far worse hit.
I agree. That's what I was going to say. I thought the Immelman hit was way worse than the Forsberg hit. Like I said, the only thing I can think of is Forsberg, his elbow came up and hit him in the face. Obviously, Vizi was bleeding. That's the only, like, the initial hit was very clean.
Yeah.
But he got loose with the elbow, and the elbow hit him in the face. That's the only thing I could think of.
Here's my thing. If that isn't Jimmy Vizi, change the name on the Rangers. If it's not Jimmy Vizi, do you think that has any impact on
this? Let me take it a step further. Forget Jimmy Vizi. Who's Jimmy Vizi play for? If it wasn't the New York Rangers, if it wasn't a team in New York City, in the biggest market in the country. By the way, where's the headquarters? Where's the NHL offices? Yeah. If it was the Ottawa Senators, if it was the Los Angeles Kings on Thursday night, do you think it would still have been the same outcome?
I can't see it.
I don't either. We don't know. But to me, New York played a part in this. The opponent played a part in this. That's my feeling.
I think it very well could be. I wouldn't be surprised if the individual played a part too, just because clearly there was some chippiness in that game. Every time he touches the puck or comes near the puck in that arena, he gets booed. He gets the Ryan Suter, Alexander Radulov treatment kind of thing. I think that all plays a part in it here. And it's unfortunate for the Preds. The one good thing you know here is this team can play without Philip Forsberg. They just did it for a month. They'll be able to do it for three more games this
Although,
week.
Don't look for five-goal games. That's the one thing that jumped out of me. This team can still win without Philip Forsberg, but look at the difference between with nine in the lineup. They scored 10 goals in two games when they were winning 1-0, 3-0, 2-1 without Philip Forsberg. It's definitely a different look offensively. They can still win, but it's a different look without Forsberg in there. I don't look for them to score five goals in the next three games.
The Rangers' power plays in the third period brought this closer. So now your two-game total is 67.
Should have been two blowouts.
67-41 in terms of shots.
Mm-hmm.
Through two periods, so five periods after Forsberg came back, through two periods Saturday night, it was 59-27 on shots. You're going to win, and you're going to win big a lot if you're out shooting your opponents by that much.
The Rangers had eight shots through two periods. Eight. Through 40 minutes.
And I can't
The Keens got shut out with 19 shots.
Yeah. And I can't really think on Saturday night through the first two periods of a moment where one of those shots was particularly dangerous.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of the Chicago series, actually, last year at the start when Pekka had the back-to-back shutouts up there at the United Center. They would get a few shots, but they were from the outside. He had pretty clean looks on them. Nothing seemed dangerous.
I didn't think Pekka had to work very hard for two games at all, which is a nice luxury. It's a nice luxury to have, right? Where you can play your guy. Because, look, they've made a conscious effort to pull back and try to manage his games and minutes down the stretch. I mean, it's very apparent, which is smart. I think they want a fresh Pekka. But now, even when you're playing, if you can get games like this where he's not even – I don't want to say he's not sweating – but I don't know that, but he's not having to work that hard. I mean, Thursday night, let's be totally honest. That's got to be one of the easiest shutouts you can get in the National League. I didn't think he particularly faced hardly anything damaging. I thought there may be in a couple plays, an entire game, where he had to come up with a decent save. Other than that, man, the Predators just clamped down and they made Los Angeles look bad.
It was a fun couple games. Now we see what they do on the road.
Yeah. Right, next four on the road. Let's go to Ricky in Antioch. Ricky, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Ricky.
Good. Well, Darren, I consider you a friend and somebody I respect greatly, but I have to really disagree with you on this VC hit.
Okay.
The stall hit is a hockey play. He was in the way of going down. Defenseman followed through with the hit, drove him into the boards. There's nothing you can do on that. But when you deliberately stop and throw an elbow into someone's mouth, with the fact that the hockey equipment made nowadays is basically made out of Kevlar, your shoulder pads, your elbow pads are strong enough to break somebody's jaw, to break a bone, to throw that into someone's head. And it's not a Ranger thing here. It's not a fact that it's Jimmy VC. We know the hate for VC. If it was on the other side and it was Forsberg who was knocked out, I would be just as angry. You cannot deliberately attempt to take something into someone's head in the sport of hockey.
Yeah, but you're saying deliberately, Ricky. How can you determine it was deliberate? I mean, that was a play, a bang-bang play, and you're acting like you are saying that was premeditated. You're saying that Forsberg went into that behind the net.
He stopped dead in his tracks.
Huh?
He stopped dead in his tracks and threw his elbow into his head. The follow-through was directly into his mouth. If you watch the play,
I'm not willing to go there.
See, I think it is the follow-through off of the hit. But what happens is you have a guy who's not paying attention to what's going on behind the net in VC, who clearly didn't know where he was, didn't know what was around him, and Forsberg back into him. He tried to back-check him. Forsberg does that a lot, but there was no malicious intent. He tried to check him. The follow-through did go through, and so to Darren's point, I guess if you want to give him a game because he actually did make contact with the head and that's just your steadfast rule, fine. But to try and say that that was somehow malicious or deliberate, no, I'm not buying that.
You have to be responsible for your actions. I will 100% agree with you on the suspension as a joke. I called in last week about Marchand, and we spoke about this. The NHL is a joke. It's like if they throw a dart at a board and wherever it lands, that's how many suspensions you're going to get game-wise. It's a game suspension. I'm just disagreeing with the fact that I think he's got to be responsible for his actions.
I didn't say he didn't have to be responsible. I'm just saying I don't agree with you, Ricky. I don't think there's any way that you can – you're painting the picture it was deliberate. Like that play was to deliberately pop him in the face. And that's where I'm saying I'm not willing to go there. Am I willing to go there with you and say he has to be more responsible? And because of that, if you noticed, I said I wouldn't have been surprised if he got suspended. I thought it would be a game, and I would have been okay saying, look, you made a clean hit, but you can't pop him in the face with your elbow. You got to be responsible for your arms. Then I would have been okay with that. Three games, I'm not okay, because to me, that is the league saying what you're saying, and I'm not willing to go there. What history is there that Forsberg does things like that? I mean, if this was Marchand, this is not even a discussion. This is, we know what he was doing. But Forsberg has no history of that.
I 100% agree with you on that point, Darren. 100% agree. It should not be more than one game. And this is where I said last week, the NHL is a joke. It's hard to watch. You're taking a superstar away from a team for three games on a first-time offense. I may be wrong. This is his first suspension, correct?
Yep.
That's absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't have any history of this.
Yeah, right. So I agree with you. One game should have been the maximum. I'm just stating that. And again, if I come across the wrong way, I apologize. I'm just saying I believe he should have been responsible for his action. The follow-through was directly to the head. I believe one game max should have been the suspension. And my anger is more towards the NHL again coming out and just looking foolish on something like this.
Yep. Hey, Ricky, thank you. Appreciate it. Here's seeing you Saturday night. Ricky came up to me before the game in Barrel House and said, and he's a Ranger. He's a New York guy. And he said the Predators are going to absolutely roast the Rangers tonight. And I was like, really? I was like, okay, good. I hope you're right. I said, but, you know, the Rangers just got roughed up Thursday night in Madison Square Garden by Toronto. They lost 4-0. They may be a little bit angry. I know they've got a lot of bodies out. He said the Predators are going to have their way. So he was right. They did have their way.
They did.
But I don't – I think we're on the same page, right?
Yeah.
Neither one of us are willing to say it was deliberate.
No, absolutely not. And if you want to say that he deserved the game because ultimately he did make contact with the head, okay, fine. I don't have a big problem with that. Here's the thing, though. If you're going to talk about personal responsibility for yourself on the ice, does VC bear any of the responsibility here? I mean, if you're not paying attention to where you are on the ice and have no self-awareness of anything out there, which he clearly did not in that moment – I mean, I think there's a lot of guys who avoid that hit. If Forsberg does exactly what he did, I think a lot of guys in the NHL flat out avoid the hit. Not just don't get knocked out. I think they avoid the hit. VC was so clueless about where he was, he nearly got knocked out from it. At some point, you have to take responsibility for yourself to protect yourself.
If I had a dollar for every time I heard Crispy over the years say, keep your head on a swivel, man, I would be rich. Let's go to Kyle. Kyle, what's up?
Hey, guys. I disagree with that last call. I mean, I watched the two-minute little video that the NHL put out, and in super slow-mo, it looks like, yeah, Forsberg could maybe let up. But at the same time, that's in super slow-mo. And there was no penalty on the ice. And the three-game suspension wasn't for elbowing. It was for interference. I mean, VC, what happened is he dumped the puck back. He passed it behind the net. I'm sure he knew that before Forsberg saw it. And he didn't make any attempt to go around, and he kept his head down. Forsberg led with his butt, and his elbow didn't hit his face. His shoulder hit his face. His elbow hit the other guy's arm. It's an absolute abomination to give him three games. He's played over 300 games with no action taken against him, but nothing wrong. To give him three games, I think it's absolute. It's just wrong, man.
Okay, Kyle, thank you. I know there's a lot of people that feel like you. They were not. I saw the reaction when the news came out. They were not happy. I mean, you know, and I understand. Go, you know, to what we were saying, Forsberg has no history of this. But I also know today, although it is blurred, the lines are blurred, because I thought they were trying to fix blows to the head. I thought the Johansson hit was clearly what they were trying to get out of the game, and they didn't do anything to Carrier, as you said. So I thought that there was a chance he could get suspended. Three games, no. I would have never said that. I would have thought it would be a game just saying, hey, the hit was clean, but you got to watch your arms, yeah, your elbows, or whatever. If it was shoulder, elbow, arm, whatever hit VZ's face, you have to be responsible
for
that.
If you want to say that any contact to an opponent's head on a check is a suspension-worthy thing because you're trying to make the game safer, I am completely in favor of that, even incidental in this case. But if that's what you're saying, there's no way Carrier doesn't get anything, and then that hit does. So you either have to go all in and say, this is what we're doing. In the name of safety, this is what we're doing. And then make that stand the test of time for every incident and use that across the board. Or you have to be able to judge intent and maliciousness better, because of those two hits that we've seen very closely here in the last few weeks, one was basically headhunting, and the other one was, I think, an incidental check. I mean, he hit him with his backside. If you're going at somebody's head, you're not going in with your backside. And for three games for that, it just seems out of whack.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about what took place last night in Minneapolis. A really good game. We got a lot to break down. We'll do that next on 102.5 The Game. Back here on 102.5 The Game, Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman from News Channel 5. I did forget to mention a new face behind the glass. One Julian Council making his debut in middays.
Hello.
Julian, good
morning. Hey,
Julian.
Morning.
Long
how you guys
time
doing?
To see, buddy.
I know, Steve. Saw you like all last week. Now you're here again. Can't get away from you.
I just wanted to stay on the show you're doing.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. Makes plenty of sense.
So was it different today, or did you
I feel
keep
human.
With the same routine?
I'm not tired.
Okay, so you did sleep in?
I did sleep in relatively, to 8 o'clock, I think.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, so I hit snooze on alarm three times, so that's pretty normal.
Was the alarm still set? Did you forget to, turn it off? So it went off at, 5:15 or whatever?
No, Friday morning when I woke up, I deleted those alarms.
All of them. Smart man.
Last time you'll be doing that. I did read a funny tweet during the break. It's Ryan C. Fowler on Twitter, and he's down in Tuscaloosa. He's on 102.9 down there. He's a Heisman voter, I guess a contributor to SEC Country, and I did get a chuckle out of his tweet about 10 minutes ago. Oh, actually, this was last night, so somebody's retweeted it. Breaking news. The University of Central Florida is claiming the Super Bowl victory and will host a parade on Friday night at the Magic Kingdom.
That's pretty good.
That's been a bad play for UCF because they've become villains over it. I understand what they were doing at first, but they went so far with it. Now everybody turned on them. Like nobody, not a feel good story anymore.
See, but that's just because we're all snarky on social media and those sort of things. I think they actually got all the mileage they wanted out. They made a huge story of themselves. They got a lot of attention over it. And let me tell you, because I was just down in Orlando for the Pro Bowl a week ago and talking to a bunch of Titans players down there. And I spent my one afternoon and evening off. I went to the Magic Kingdom with some friends. The amount of Central Florida National Championship gear that I saw, unbelievable.
Really?
I mean, so people at least down there, now that is where Central Florida is, obviously, but people down there have taken to this, and they take it as a source of pride, and they're all excited about it. So I don't think it's totally backfired on them.
So it was visible.
Oh, it was visible.
Huh.
Because I truly thought, all right, cool, this is a sweet little thing. They had the parade. They gave bonuses to the coaches. Oh, that's great. But truly, what are the legs to this story? And then I started walking around and realized that people with legs actually had the shirts on. I was like, well, there's your legs. They're walking around in Knights National Championship gear.
I have to believe, before we delve into last night, Steve, that this is what John Robinson is hoping happens with Mike Vrabel, right? Philadelphia made a coaching change. It wasn't working with Chip Kelly. And in the second year, he wins a Super Bowl. Obviously changed the culture there, changed their mentality, their approach, and they win a Super Bowl. And I know that has to be what John Robinson is thinking, that we all have identified that he thought Mike Mularkey, that may have been, he thinks that was the ceiling for him. That was as far as he could. Probably like Kansas City identified Alex Smith, like he's great in the regular season. This is as far, he can win us divisions, but that's as far as he can take us, and now we're going to turn it over to Mahomes and see if he can take us further, right?
I think you're exactly right. I think the Eagles roster at the end of Chip Kelly may be slightly better than where the Titans roster was right now. We've had a lot of discussions about this lately of exactly where the Titans roster is, and I think they're a borderline playoff roster if you stack them all out. Certainly not a final eight team in the NFL, which is where they ultimately got this year. So the roster still has a ways to go, but they're in that mix of being a talented team with a quarterback that can take you someplace. And so, yeah, it's all about – I mean, we've said this from the moment he got hired, right? It's kind of the Mark Richt comparison at Georgia with Kirby Smart, in that you had a coach that was winning you nine games a year
in
his
2 years,
gets him into the playoffs, wins a game there, and now you're hiring someone else to get better. It's a small window. You're trying to hit the bullseye there to raise your ceiling. You're hoping you do that. You clearly lower the floor in the process because you have no idea what's going to happen in front of you. But the goal is for Vrabel to hit that very small window or small ceiling.
Well, a lot of people, a lot, have done it. More than just Philadelphia and Georgia, and failed miserably. I mean, like you said, it's a small window where you're saying, I think we can be better. Like you said, Mark Richt was very consistent. He kept Georgia at a high level every year, but they weren't breaking through. They weren't going where Kirby Smart took them in year two. They weren't even getting to the playoffs. And they hit, and they look like geniuses, but so many times it fails. I mean, we've seen it time and time again, whether it's in the NFL or college, they feel like that's the max, that's the ceiling, and what ends up happening is they fail, and it's just the snowball effect. It just gets worse before it gets better, and you're thinking, what in the hell were they thinking? You know, that was a huge mistake. Like when Ole Miss got rid of David Cutcliffe.
Yeah.
And they went to Ed Orgeron. And it didn't get better.
There's a great stat about Peterson now. So before the 2016 season, there were seven coaching changes in the National Football League. Three of those seven coaches got fired during or at the end of this season, including Mike Mularkey, by the way. Three other coaches from that group have losing records through 2 years. The seventh coach is Doug Peterson, who just won the Super Bowl, which I think tells you how difficult it is to get this right in the National Football League is, you know, however you want to break that down. And Mularkey's a weird case because he had a winning record and won a playoff game and got fired. But out of seven coaches, you got three that are out of jobs in 2 years. You've got three more that have struggled and certainly haven't turned anything around. And then you have one who has already won at the highest level It is very difficult to hit, but when you do, you did a really good job, and the Eagles certainly did.
So that would have been what? Hugh Jackson?
Hugh
Shanahan?
Jackson. Shanahan's just a year.
Oh, so it's got to be the two-year window.
Just the 2016 class.
So when he got hired by Philly.
Right.
Who else fits in
there?
McAdoo?
McAdoo, who got fired.
First year playoffs, second year disaster.
Right.
Chip Kelly, but he's gone after a year.
Chip Kelly already
Chip Kelly's gone. Who else would be in that category? So nobody. Oh, Marone.
That's his first year, Marone.
Yeah, this is technically his first year because he was the
He took over. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Who else would be in that category?
Malarkey's out. I mean, the guys who got fired are Kelly, McAdoo, Malarkey.
Mm.
It's the three that are in the other mix.
So Philly picked the right one.
But
by the way, all the reports out there that McDaniels was not going to Indy, looks like he is still going to Indy. So he will be in the division. So it was a great game. It's exactly what we wanted it to be, right? 41-33.
Awesome.
I was wrong. I thought the Patriots would win. I thought this would be their last hurrah. I still got another half of my prediction that only time will tell if I'm right or not. Clearly, I was wrong on the first half because I said the Patriots would win, and this would be the last time they would ever get back to the Super Bowl under Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. I still believe that to be true, but only time will tell. Because I think the conference is getting better. They're going to lose a bunch of assistants. I think there's something different about Bill Belichick. Still, even, I mean, he went to an NBA game. Did you see him? He's down on the field in a suit, and he's taking pictures with his family. I don't know. He just looks different. I think there's a lot to the story.
Sure.
I think there's weirdness behind the scenes.
His whole staff is changing over this year. Brady's 40, going
on 41 next year.
That strawberry and quinoa diet can only take you so far, you would think. So,
of course, it didn't play out last night.
I mean, he was awesome.
It was for over 500 yards
and
loses.
And I think he could be awesome forever, but it just, yeah. I mean, at some point, it's going to come to an end. And maybe it was last night.
So I have to ask you, because I'm confused on, it was a very controversial topic last night because it's been controversial for years in the league. And I feel like the league took notice, and I feel like they made a change last night. I feel like they did a rule change in the two-week span from the championship, the conference championship games to the Super Bowl, because those two plays, in my opinion, in the regular season would have been overturned. They wouldn't have been catches. I feel like they changed. I think that the league has taken so much heat over the catch.
Oh yeah. Well,
that they're going to do just the opposite, unless it's really, really blatant. They're telling these crews it's a catch.
Well, we heard Roger Goodell last week, State of the League address. He basically said, "We got to take a look at this. We've made the rule so concrete that people are now looking at things and saying that's a catch." And we're finding ways to overturn them. And people don't tune into our games to see these great athletic plays and then be told that that's not a catch. It's not a great play. It's incomplete. People don't tune in to watch that. And so I think what you saw in live time last night is you saw an interpretation change by the National Football League. And I think it's right. Because when you looked at both of those Philadelphia touchdowns, I think when you watched them, you thought, that's a touchdown. And, you know, then when you look back on the first one, was the ball maybe moving? Maybe. But he ultimately secured it, and it was within one motion. You know, it took him a second to actually get it secured away, but that's how it works. He got both feet in. He ultimately had it secured by the time he went to the ground. To me, that looks like a catch. But I think you're absolutely right. Given what we've seen throughout the course of the year, I think it's entirely possible they said he wouldn't have had control and have been incomplete. And the second one to me was Jesse James in Pittsburgh all over.
It was absolutely recreated in the Super Bowl. It was the same play, yeah. I thought.
It looked like it. The only difference was James got a knee down as well. And so he actually, I guess within the process of the catch, he sort of voluntarily went to the ground. But, you know, in this case, I guess they ruled that there was a clear delineation of him catching the ball and becoming a runner and then leaping for the goal line, and that's what changed it. But, man, it's close. And I think what all reasonable eyes saw last night was that's a catch, and he made a heck of a play to go to the goal line. And the same eyes thought the same thing about Jesse James, but fortunately, we've had enough backlash, and the NFL has finally heard it. They finally listened to us on something.
Ertz's was far more like clear as a catch, and him becoming a runner. Because he had like 3 feet down, then moved to the goal line more so than Jesse James.
Well, Jesse James
was, he was catching the ball and then falling down at the same time. Like, he never was a runner in that situation like Ertz was.
I largely agree with you. But
at least from what I can remember, it wasn't nearly kind of the same where he's up and running, then going to the goal line. It was him catching the ball, then kind of falling towards the goal line, more so than getting 3 feet down and then transitioning to the goal line for a dive.
Well, but I guess all I'm trying to say is Ertz last night had 3 steps and a leap. James had 2 steps down and a knee and fell forward. So 3 points to the ground, which in normal situations would give you a catch in any one of them, and then you fall forward. They were almost identical at the goal line.
Right.
It's just,
I'm shocked that Clement stowed, because it looked like at the end there, he kind of lost the control of the ball, then stepped out of bounds. I thought, from what we've seen all year, that wasn't a catch. Ertz, I don't understand what they were reviewing, because it's very obvious that he was a runner and then fell down to the ground and lost control of the ball.
If there wasn't, though, the Jesse James play, we would have all felt that way.
That's very, very
but
true.
Because of the Steelers game against the Patriots, it put a seed of doubt in all of our minds.
Sure.
Yeah, but Clement, I can't believe that stood.
And that's
me either. I said that is absolutely coming back. And I know Chris Collinsworth was all over the place on that play.
Oh, he had no idea.
But I thought it was coming back, because that is what we have been trained to believe. Because that, to me, is exactly what we've seen overturned time and time again in the NFL for years, not just this season. This has been going on for years. Now, the question is, now that the big game is over, are they going to go back to business as usual, or are they going to keep this intact?
If they're smart, this is what it is moving forward. Because here's what they've created for themselves, and this is what we said last night in the sports office as we were watching the game. On both cases, we looked at each other, John and I, and we kind of were like, that looks like a catch, doesn't it? And we agreed, and we said, but this is the NFL, so nothing they come back here will surprise me. And that's unfortunately the position they've painted themselves into a corner with, is anytime it's a catch or a no catch, you won't be shocked whatever the review ends up being, because we just simply don't know. Hopefully last night was a step towards regular season consistency, where if it looks like a catch, they go with the catch more times than not. They actually side with the eyeballs.
We'll come back, wrap up the first hour on this Monday morning. Frank Schwab to kick off the second hour. Yahoo shutdown corner NFL writer. We'll get in more of the Super Bowl with him. A lot more coming. Don't forget, in the third hour, we'll head east to Knoxville. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara. Derek Barnett had a big, big play in the Super Bowl. Big play. We'll talk about that with him and a lot more at noon. We'll be back. 102.5 The Game. .46 in Nashville, which was the lowest rated Super Bowl in this town in 11 years. Is that right? Or is it 12 years?
I think it's 12.
So it's
Super Bowl
years.
40, which would be 12 years if my math is correct, was the last time it was that low.
Down 12% from last year. And this is per Mark Benda at News Channel 5. Wow.
My guy.
Yeah. And Mark's been doing this, and I'm so appreciative of it, because he's been doing this forever, as long as I can remember. And it's a great gauge, even for what we do here. I mean, I've said this many times on the air. I mean, and I've told Mark this, you know, thanks for sending this stuff out, because it tells us what this market likes, what they're paying attention to.
Yeah.
And sometimes you never know. And then sometimes it's telling to see things that used to be popular, and then you've kind of just watched it go down and down over the years, or things that weren't on the radar, all of a sudden, man, did you notice that keeps popping up? Or when you get the great story of Goodlettsville or South Nashville, and then you see that rating, you're like, wow, that's cool that many people in Middle Tennessee.
You're getting 19 ratings for the Little League World Series. Kids who no one knew 2 weeks ago, but now are household names and favorites. One thing that's really been evident to me through all of Mark's research this fall is how much the Preds playoff run last year has changed their perception in this town. I don't have your nightly numbers necessarily, but I mean, before last year, even Preds playoff games were getting threes and fours at the max. They were in the 30s in the Stanley Cup final last year. I mean, that is a massive, massive number, and it's just changed the casual viewer of the regular season for the Preds. Meanwhile, in the NFL, the Titans, who were poised to make and ultimately did their first playoff appearance in 9 years, every single week this year was down basically year to year from last season until week 17, until essentially they played a playoff game, a game to keep the season going. Week 17 was significantly up, and then the two playoff games were massive. It was like a 31 in Kansas City and a 39-9 against the Patriots. Massive, massive numbers there. But just your run-of-the-mill regular season game, down this year, as we've seen across the NFL.
It's been every week. Now, I would say, okay, well, the trend has been down, 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 all regular season, the entire playoffs, but I thought the one that's going to have the shield, not the NFL shield, the shield of saying, okay, you can't get in here, a force field, is the Super Bowl. Like, yep. It can sustain anything. Well, now we're seeing it's down 12% from last year in this market.
Why?
Yeah, why? That's what I want to know. Why?
Because
it was a great game. It's not because it wasn't compelling. It was compelling from start to finish.
Well, and the arguments you hear from a lot of people when you want to talk about sports ratings going down or sports network ratings going down, what are the arguments you always hear? You hear about cord cutting. People just they don't have the networks in the way that they used to have them where they had to in their cable package. You hear about the apps and things you can watch on your phone, you can watch in other places. And then you just hear about the proliferation of other things, the available entertainment in other avenues. I don't think any of those apply to the Super Bowl because it's only on network television. So you're not talking about cable things where you would be
cord-cutting. Like the national championship game.
Well, couldn't you stream it on Yahoo? I thought Yahoo was streaming the Super Bowl, or like on at least NBC Sports Can Live
you?
Extra.
Okay.
You could have streamed it.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
But I guess you could stream it. But here's the thing is, how many people are streaming? You know, the Super Bowl to me is an event where most people are getting together with other people and watching it anyway. So whether that's in a bar or a friend's basement or whatever, how many people are doing that streamed and then bringing
a lot? Well, a lot, at least people my age are, because last year when I watched the game, we streamed it.
Okay.
You streamed the Super Bowl.
Yeah, streamed it on
year.
The Fox Sports Go app, and then the app went to crap in the fourth quarter, so we had to like pull up a laptop instead.
See, well, maybe that's the big difference because you're like 7 years younger than me or something, and maybe that's the huge difference because I don't know anybody my age. And I don't think I'm like ancient.
No, you're not.
Like that. I don't know anybody my age who's streaming it in a group like that. Now, maybe if you're traveling on business or something and it's round one of the playoffs or NCAA tournament or something, you'll pull that up. But to me, the Super Bowl is sort of that one day a year where it is appointment viewing for everybody, even non-sports fans, and you have a party with
it's
55
just a gathering.
People or
you're
whatever.
Right.
And to me, that should be the most bulletproof ratings day of the year. And apparently it's not.
That's what I was thinking. So they obviously have problems. Is a catch, does the catch, no catch factor in to all their problems this year? It factors in there somewhere. I think it's a list. I don't think it's one thing. Does the anthem stuff factor in? It does. Is the game changing? Does that factor in? It does. Is it lacking a little less star power? Yes, it is. Even though you had Tom Brady, but you don't have Peyton and Manning anymore. And you've got some superstars that are on the back end of their careers. So I think it's lacking a little bit. When Tom Brady leaves, then they've got, and Drew Brees and Tom Brady will probably be out together. So you've got that gone along with Peyton Manning.
Frankly, the Patriots themselves, probably a problem. You know, they've been there so much now, people
Maybe
are just tired of them.
Fatigue of the Patriots being there. I mean, there's a lot of things on that list. The Super Bowl has nothing to do with what we talk about here. Like, people not going to Titans games is, well, they don't want to pay the prices, they don't want to wait in lines, the food's not good, the parking, you can just stay at home. This is the Super Bowl. It's not about going and attending the game. It's about just simply having a gathering at your home and watching it, and it's still down 12%. Maybe it's the product. Maybe it's just the product isn't the same either because of the rules, and they don't hit like they don't hit anymore like they used to back in the day. What if people grew up in? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how you, like, I'm with you. I thought the one game of the entire year is the Super Bowl. It's not going to affect because there's nothing going on that Sunday. It's the only thing a sports fan would watch, and yet in this market it's down 12%.
See, the other crazy thing about this, too, is I personally don't know any of these people, but some people just watch for the halftime show every year because it's such a great show and it brings the stars out. Some people just watch for the commercials. You know, it's not even all about the game when you're talking about the Super Bowl. That's how big this event is on a worldwide stage. And it can't even be protected by those things necessarily. Mm-mm. So, I mean, they've got problems.
Doug and Donaldson. Doug, what's up?
Hello.
How you doing?
I can't believe y'all don't know why the ratings are down. It's the American flag national anthem controversy that a lot of people think the NFL has embraced it. I mean that's all over the internet.
Well, I've already said that, Doug, so thank you for the call. I did say the anthem. It was on the list. It's one of many. It's not just the anthem, but the anthem is on the list. I said that.
Yeah. Look, there's no question. I don't know how you quantify it or give it out percentages. I do think the longer this goes on and the ratings continue to go down and that continues to be a controversy, maybe the more you point to that.
Well, you'll probably see a change next year.
Yeah.
I don't believe it'll be a focal point of games week in and week out.
And if you do, I mean, that is evidence that the league understands that that's been a problem for it. Maybe they don't know how to quantify even how big of a problem it is, but they understand it's a problem. If they're going to make a change, if they're going to change policy or rules or where the guys are during the national anthem, that's understanding that they have a problem.
Frank Schwab to kick off the second hour. That's next on 102.5 The Game.